I'm David Roberts, student and inductor graduate course in history. Dr. Baco to interview a retired teacher, Ms. Bertie Wallace, 1280 Calhoun Terrace, a retired teacher. Time of interview, 4 o'clock. Date, 6th of June, 6th month, 25th, 1973. Ms. Wallace, could you give me some information about your early life?
I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, the 13th of 15 children out on Capitol Avenue, a white community. And my parents moved out there because my father was a Methodist preacher and he wanted to send his children to Clark College, and that he did. All those who wanted to, who stayed in college, finished. And I think correctly about 7 or 8 finished Clark. And I had a brother that I remember seeing him come back from the, on a furlough from the Spanish-American War. His name was James. And that was the first I knew about a war. And the first time I'd seen this brother was when he came back on this furlough. And the other children all went forth and did various things. One, my father was a preacher. I had a brother that was a preacher. And 3 sisters married Gammonites, which were preachers.
What year were you born?
I was born in 1880, what's going to be, the 28th of June, next week, I'll be 86. I was born June the 28th, what's that, 1887, that would be, wouldn't it?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any specific examples of discrimination in the neighborhood where you live?
Well, oh, yeah, there was discrimination. All the white people around there were relatives. They all called my mother Aunt Mary and my father Uncle John, but we had to call them Miss Sally and Mr. whatever his name was. That made it, for children growing up, we had to get an understanding why we had so many white relatives and we couldn't claim them as relatives.
Were they your actual relatives?
No, they weren't our relatives, just neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, poor white.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right.
I mean, they were that class of white people that they weren't rich. And they weren't the poorest. They weren't the Tobacco Road crowd. It was just common, everyday, poor white people.
But they wouldn't let you know there was a difference between them.
Oh, yeah, that regardless to what, you had to recognize them and keep them. Now, I think my mother and father were, after I grew up and understood it, I think they were smart. Very smart people, because they taught us how to get along with those people and assure us all and say, oh, it doesn't, you don't worry about them calling you aunt or calling me, we calling them aunt and uncle. You just be honest and keep on working, keep going to school. That was their logic at that time.
Do you remember what type of Jim Crow laws that was here in Atlanta at that time? Or segregated laws? What type of laws did they have around here then?
Well, the laws they had then were similar to what they have now. No, I don't say similar because Negroes are making progress and have made progress. But you had to sit in the back of the car, street car, and because at that time they had street cars and not buses like they have now. And they would have, I remember once Black Patty, who was a Negro artist. She came here to sing at the opera house, and no Negroes were allowed. And I remember my aunt, Mrs. Minnie Price, and my mother, whose father was white. My mother was a little slave girl, and her father was a white man. And so they wanted to go hear Black Patty. And so they put on gloves and fixed all of, both of them looked, you know, had this fair complexion. And they went to see Black Pat, and they got my father to drive them, and they had him to pose as a, you know, as their servant. They sat in the back, and he didn't want to do it at first. He cussed them out, said, no, said, let Black Pat sing all she wants to sing. I'm not going up there standing around them old crackers to try to get in there. It said, well, we don't want you to go in. We just want you to drive us up there. But that happened, and he said he was never so scared in all his days as sitting out there waiting for these two white women who were black women to come out and for him to drive them off. And he told him, he said, I'm swearing off tonight. Don't ask me anymore. And all along, and then nearly everything, you go to the store, you had to, long as there was a white person in there, they wait, you had to stand back and wait until they were served. And they were, I noticed some of the clerks would say, what will you have? And what will you have? And when they got to the Negro, they said, what do you want? Anything to embarrass, anything to keep up that slogan of keeping a Negro in his place. That was the whole gist of it.
Did these laws affect you in any way? Did it have any bearing on you as a person, these Jim Crow laws? Did it harm you in any way? Were you constantly made aware that they existed by your parents and by the community?
Oh, yeah, we were, Yes, we were aware of that existed, because we always had to recognize, you know, as Miss and Mr. And my mother was unmarried and Uncle John. We couldn't understand it. And it was hard for them to explain.
Did it affect you in your travel around here in Atlanta, going here in Atlanta? Did it affect you in a way?
Well, this is what I think about it. You had been drilled and you knew what was going to take place. Consequently, you tried to stay, you know, keep from having trouble.
And you said your place of birth was here in Atlanta?
In Atlanta, out on Capitol Avenue.
How were black people treated in the courts here in Atlanta during this time?
Very seldom they got justice. They just look up and say it's a Negro. on trial, and they just gave him whatever time they wanted to give him.
Could you point out any one example, you know of any case of where a black was tried and he didn't get justice, you felt?
Let me see. I don't recall any special time that happened, or it was just general that.
Did you go to one of the local colleges?
Yeah, I went to Clark College.
Went to Clark. What year did you enter?
Ooh, that's so long ago.
That's all right. What was the student life at Clark like when you entered?
Well, you know, at that time, now, you know, that's a long time ago. I have lived a long time, and I can remember this, that it was more of a religious type of thing. They didn't, and at that time, Clark College, it was Clark University, and they started, you could go to Clark from ABC, the first grade on through, those that were able to make it.
Well, I wonder why they named it university there.
Well, they changed. I don't know, but that was what it was known all the while until they changed it to Clark College.
Well, what did the students do for activities in the community? Were you free to go out in the community and?
Yes, to an extent, but let me tell you, Negroes had to work so hard at that time trying to eke out a living until they didn't have too much time left. Time they went to school. I have seen black boys come there to Clark College with their clothes in a flour sack. And then they had flour in sacks. And they would come there with their determination to go to school, and they would make every sacrifice in the world. And they didn't have the proper clothing or anything. They just came on and would anything they could get to do. But I tell you, really, I think in those days the parents stressed being honest and keep praying and don't get discouraged. I used to hear my mother say all the time, there's a brighter day coming for the Negroes. See, just wait, it's coming.
Do you remember the riot in 1906?
Mm-hmm.
Would you tell me all that you know about that, please?
Yeah. Dolores!
All right. Tell me all that you can recall about the riot of 1906.
Now, in that riot, let me see, it started in town up there. I don't know why they started, but it was soon all over Atlanta, and it, I remember that one of my brothers was in there, up in the city when it started, and he started running. All he said was they're having a riot, the white people are beating up the Negroes, and he got home all right, but he said it was awful. And there were some people, colored people, who you just killed for nothing, just killed outright. And I remember there's some mulattoes who just mixed up back there. You know how the white man was in the driving seat. He had his women, and then the Negro women too, and they had to submit because they couldn't do, they couldn't fight the battle all by themselves. And whenever it came, why, you know, they had to accept it. I can remember my uncle, Luther Judson Price. He lived with us until he married. That's my mother's brother.
Is Price name out there? Is Price High School name out
there? Yeah. What? I was about to tell you that he was, now he and other Negroes like that could get away with some things.
Why could they get away?
Like, you know, they pass as long as they could.
They could pass for white?
Yeah.
Oh.
They weren't trying to pass. Just the white man just looked down and saw he was light skinned, and they went on and shoved him on over there, and they just stayed over there as long as he could. But he was the young people in those days were different to what they are now. I guess it's due to the circumstances under which they were born. It looked like they were just determined to get an education as far as they could. And so my uncle went to Clark, and along with my older brothers and sisters, just like one of my mother's children. And so he finally took a business course at Clark, and then he finally got out and had a store down there in South Atlanta on Gammon Avenue. Then he continued in this store, and his reputation was good, and so he was finally made, they put a post office, a branch post office, in the end of his store. And he was the first, I guess, first Negro postmaster. Maybe in Georgia. I know he was the first in
Atlanta. You remember what year that was? It's all right if you don't.
Well, I listen. I'm not much on remembering dates.
That's quite all right.
But
right.
That was where it could have been. Now, you figured out that was back there. I've told you how.
Mm-hmm. Right.
When I was born, well, okay, I had to be up about 8 or 9 years old, you know, to know about those type of things.
Did knowing us right, did any whites come on Clark College, and did they do anything damaging the black communities, you know?
Now, the nearest that I remember about that riot in South Atlanta, see, as I told you, it started in town and then it spread it out. Lakewood Heights was composed of the same class of white people, not rich and not real poor, but a middle-class white man. And they were in Lakewood Heights. And the Negroes, they call that South Atlanta, the Negroes were sandwiched in there between Lakewood Heights and the white section, which was up on Capitol Avenue further.
In your lifetime, have you ever seen the Ku Klux Klan out here in Atlanta parading?
Oh, yeah.
Would you tell them about it, please?
I know they... I remember clearly, now this is the last one I saw, that Dr. Willis J. King was president of Gammon, and some white woman went out from the city, went out there to interview him, and he didn't have time to be bothered with her or something. He kind of spoke. He didn't have time. That was the main thing. And she slapped his face. Oh, my goodness, that got out all kinds of ways. And so the Ku Klux Klan Went on through Mechanicsville, that's in Pittsburgh section, and went on out to Gammon Theological Seminary, they called it. But not anything drastic happened. But I know they went. Now, at that time, my husband had died then, and I was working insurance as an insurance agent. And I was right there when they marched down McDaniel Street to go. They were on their way to Clark. They had on these sheets, hooded sheets and everything. And going through this Pittsburgh area, the young Negro didn't know. They got in behind them and marched with them on out. I don't know how far they went, but they were keeping step, marching with them.
There ain't other instance you know the Ku Klux Klan came out.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other instance where you know the Ku Klux Klan came out?
Well, now, during that riot was, it was a 06 and 07, because that was a year. They came up there on Clark campus.
Did the blacks in the community try to run them out of anything?
No, they just kept peaceably.
Do you remember when black business started here in Atlanta?
Now, I told you about my uncle. And that was a long time ago when he went into business. And then all the time you could see the businesses popping up here and there.
What hospital facilities were made available for blacks here?
Well, I think they could go to Grady is the first one I heard of it. Way later in years now, the colored doctors, several of them got together and opened a hospital on Young Street. I think they called it Mercy Hospital.
Well, before Grady, was there any facilities made available for blacks where they could go for medical attention?
Not that I know of. I don't remember.
How were they treated when they went to Grady? Did you hear of any instance of discrimination when they went to Grady from the time it opened?
Well, I really don't know. I'm not going to say because that pattern that they have, it was followed throughout.
Did you know Henry McNeil Turner?
Yeah, he was a preacher. Uh-huh.
Did you know him personally? You talked with him?
I've said no. Mm-mm.
You just know him?
I knew him, yeah.
Why was Washington High located on Hunter Street when most of the blacks lived in the Fourth Ward?
Well, I guess at that time the Negroes were beginning to come this way, maybe, because it seemed as though the Negroes have decided to take this southwest section.
Well, before Washington High was established, where did blacks go to high school in?
They had, as I remember, they went to private schools, and they, at the same time, the colleges kind of prepared. They would have, you know, some facilities for the students to go.
Do you know anything about the Fourth Ward over around where Howard High School is?
Yes.
Do you know anything about that area? Would you like to say anything about blacks that lived in that area?
Yeah, they were about as progressive as all the other sections, but I remember about it seemed as though they had the Fourth Ward had a reputation of being kind of rough. Negroes Because even when the riot was on, when they were having that trouble, the Negroes put up a sign, riot wanted. They were going to just fight. They really fight for
that.
Fight
for freedom, that is.
Yeah, that's right. But I remember that they said a white salesman was going down there. He didn't have a car. He had a horse and buggy, and they turned that horse around and told him to beat it away from there, down, and that was in the Fort Ward.
Did the police go over there and bother them? Did they patrol the Fort Ward fairly well? Were they afraid?
Oh, I think they were afraid. They didn't do too much of it.
Do you remember any mayors here in Atlanta during your lifetime? People who were mayor of the city? You remember any of them?
I remember Hartsfield. He seemed to have been the most outstanding, because he was a mayor that tried to be fair to all races.
Do you remember any other mayor besides him, that's back behind him?
I was trying to remember. No, I got the Talmadge crowd mixed up with. They were governors, but that's when they raised so much sand. But
all right, well, tell us about the governors. How many governors do you remember of Georgia?
I can't call the names, but I do remember different.
Say from 7 or 8, the governors that up to 1930 or 40, the governors of the state of Georgia, what were their attitude towards blacks?
Well, I tell you, really, I think that the attitude maybe was beginning to get a little better, but that pattern was followed for years. That black man couldn't, they claimed we couldn't learn, couldn't do anything, had no ability to do anything but serve them.
Blacks couldn't vote in the Democratic primary here. What action did the blacks take on? What method was used to exclude them from the Democratic primary that was held here?
What is that question again?
Black people could not vote in the Democratic primary.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
What action did the blacks take to try to vote? And what method did they use to exclude them to keep them from voting?
Well, I don't know what method they used, but I know that they have been fighting all the way trying to be recognized. They always had something. I remember Ben Davis. He was over there in the Fourth Ward, and he had a group that was following him, and he got into politics. But he got in there the hard way. He had to fight. And, we had Walter White from the Fourth Ward section. Now, Walter White could pass for white. And I think he got by with a lot of things and got a lot of information that proved beneficial to the race. Negroes are... I remember this. Negroes have been fighting a long time.
Could you point out any leaders here in Atlanta who fought?
Who fought?
Yes. By name. If you can remember any names of people who fought for these rights. Like Henry Neal Turner.
Price. Bishop Turner and... I'm trying to think of all those Negroes that the preachers tried to take a stand and help out all they could, far as they could. And There's some other one named Rucker. I think he got a, he had a government job or
postmaster.
Something like that. At any rate, he got a good job with the government, and it came from that valiant crowd who lived on, Negroes had started business on Auburn Avenue, and it's been a fight. They fought until they got recognized. All the while, they deserve a lot of credit because they have fought from the very bottom to the top. We had different leaders in various walks of life who took the lead and tried to, like Ben Davis, and there was another one over there that all this, it looked like was business and people on Auburn Avenue who tried to take the lead and tried to do something to help the Negro. Now, of course, you know, but the Fourth Ward produced Martin Luther King, Jr. And Martin Luther King, he really opened, he used a different method, and he opened a way of leadership that will last until the world gives way, because he started the Negroes to marching, and they haven't stopped marching yet. And I don't know what would the results would have been had he lived, but he was a dynamic person. And then we have others over there. You take Rumbaldas. He has done a magnificent job in leadership. And I can go back a long distance and tell you about one preacher we had named E.H. Oliver. He was Pastor Warren when it wasn't Warren Methodist Church, when it was just a little, a little chapel, a little missionary, somewhat of a storefront. But he kept working with that and working with white people and getting on, learning the white man and his method and way of doing until he built a magnificent church and was really a leader. And his wife was the same thing. She opened a kindergarten school in the church and did a good job. Being president of Gammon, and I remember how they fought and how they would call, they called up the chief of police or some place at night. And you could hear the people out there, and you could hear the guns being fired. And they had assembled all the colored people out there in South Atlanta in Gammon Seminary in the up there in their building. And while we were assembled up there, you know, and they were making all these, and they were quiet. He couldn't say a word, couldn't talk. They said that men were Ku Klux Klan was marching around out there. And they didn't know that the Negroes out in Lakewood Heights got the best of the white folks and killed up more than they, really published. But I can remember that clearly, how we heard the guns. I was in that. I was up in Gammon, along with all the other people they could get there. And it was a terrible night. And the next day, the Negroes left. Now, what made them so angry was the Negroes were getting the best of them. They were killing them. They got up in trees and shot down on the I don't know whether they were Ku Klux Klan or what, but when they marched in there, they never did tell the truth about how many white people were killed. They had, I remember one case, they had, they sent a white man to a colored undertaker. He was killed in there, and he had a black face, you know. And the undertakers found out that the white man, and they had to do something about that. And the Negroes have always been clever and good thinkers and planners. I can remember this, that black preachers had to be careful, you know, it's kind of sermons they preached. Even the white man wanted to, you know, they didn't want them to, they just didn't want them to progress. And whenever they could, they would embarrass the Negroes by trumping up some kind of charge against them.
Well, how would they know what the black preacher was saying, or how did they control what the black preacher said?
You know what I believe, and I think it was the consensus of opinion. They've always, you Negroes worked for white people, and they would, you know, sometimes tell what my preacher said, and my preacher said that, and that type of thing. And they were on the alert, because the white man did not want the Negro to get out of hand. I remember I had two brothers in World War I, and they say even this white man, when they went overseas, this white man tried to set up a prejudice and told the hotels, don't let the Negroes come in here and tell them how we treat them in America. Now, the Negro over there dying for a country, they would do it. They did that. And so those boys conducted themselves with valor. And you know the history of it, how they fought there and how they conducted themselves in such a way that they had to be recognized, and half the time they wouldn't give them the credit that was due them.
In teaching school, what school did you teach?
Oh, the school was burned down. Stars, it was a public school.
Where was it located?
Stars School.
Where was it located?
It was located on Houston Street.
Did you have material to work with? Did the white books, did the whites give you books and material to work with? Did they make any difference?
Well, now, they were fighting then back there. They said what they would do, you know, and they would get a modern set of books and new books, and then push all those books they had there over to the Negroes.
Did you get paid the same thing as white teachers?
I know he didn't. That thing went on for a long time until they had it on what they call tracks. They're paying track one, track two, and everything. Until they got Mr. Blayton. I believe it was Blayton who fought so hard and was the lawyer. I mean, at any rate, he worked so hard that they got those tracks done away with and equality. Professor C.L. Harper and some of the teachers really lost jobs because they took that stand fighting for Negroes to have equal pay. hired those boys, and they had to give them some recognition. They couldn't care. They tried. You know yourself, even in your day, they tried to have all this prejudice with the Negroes and the whites, and whites on one standard, have a standard for them, and always wanted to keep the Negro on a lower standard behind them. This equalization has sure is still costing a lot of unpleasantness and a lot of fight. Thing like that then.
You didn't have any fraternities?
Did I? Didn't know anything about it.
Well, what did you just went to school? You just studied, and that was all, and back to your dorm or back home?
Back home. They did have what they called the rhetoricals, where, you know, students would be on program to recite or sing, whatever they were talented in. And I was trying to think. Didn't have much. They played football. Not football. Baseball. Football hadn't come in then. The fellas played baseball. And that's the only recreation I believe they had. I didn't hear anything but.
You remember Spanish American War?
Who?
The Spanish American War.
Oh, yeah. I remember. I don't remember all about it, but I know this brother came back and all dressed up, you know, in uniform. And I was a little girl. And we were waiting to see Jay, waiting to see Jay. And he came on furlough, and he died in Manzanillo, Cuba, or somewhere down there. He never did come back.
Was there any resentment when your brother was named, when Price was named after?
Was it what?
Any resentment when Price High was named. I know the blacks were glad to have it, but were there any resentment from whites?
Oh, I don't think so. Mm-mm. I think he had made a reputation for himself and had conducted himself in such a way and had, you know, with the preparation that he had, he just made himself.
Did he go to school here in Atlanta?
At Clark. Well, I remember.
Tell us about when he was arrested.
Yeah, he was arrested during that.
Right.
Yeah. And Dr. William Fletcher Penn was a great. His name was around. I know he was also doing what he could as a leader. But they arrested all men, oh, they could carry them.
They're just picking them up, whether they done anything or not, you think?
Yeah,
just picking
that's
them up.
Right. Just a Negro. Excuse this. Regardless to how talented he was, just because he was a Negro, he didn't get the recognition he should have gotten. On Capitol Avenue, that I told you he moved there because he was a Methodist preacher and he wanted to send his children to Clark.
Who was he living for then?
I think they were. You know, our preachers were rural. They were, I think they lived on Reed Street out in Summerhill. Then they moved out down Capitol Avenue. There was somebody down here, a man lynched in. He was Fab in Georgia, and they cut the man's tongue out and sent souvenir, and cut it up and sent souvenir pieces to all those gammon professors.
Why did they do
on
that?
The campus.
What did he
do? Just that's showing supremacy.
You remember what year that was, anyway? That's all right, you don't know.
Oh, I think you
But they cut pieces of him and sent it.
Yeah. Set out his tongue and sent it out throughout the, to the Gammon professors. Palmetto, that's where it was, Palmetto, Georgia. And they said this man had raped a white woman.